Hi, this is Dave at thenewyorkbudget.com, and when I'm not breakdancing on the subway for money, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Live from the place where we're handing out money merit badges, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and today's a great day in the basement because I have a great idea for a new program. No, it's not that idea. Mom totally nixed that one after she found out about the fireworks display afterward. No, this one is fantastic. We're starting a money club. We'll gather in the basement, share cookies, and tell money stories that aren't at all creepy for grown-up people to share. Sound good? Here to help us kick things off by making a trip to the grocery store less painful, it's the Penny Pinchin' Mom herself, Tracy Phobes. Also, a headline about the richest people in the world, I'm sending merit badges to all those guys, a call from the Haven Lifeline, your letters, my trivia, and more. And here they are, two guys already on probation, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
We didn't do anything.
I'm on cookie probation.
Well, you gotta watch those, man. Actually, gotta watch them disappear.
Gotta start working on the bikini body.
Is Girl Scout cookie.
Did you hear that they've got s'more Girl Scout cookies now?
Hashtag heaven.
Yeah, I haven't had them yet, but if anybody's had them, I'm interested in an opinion.
It's sending a box down to the down to the basement so we can do a taste test.
Please do.
Hey, everybody. I am Joseph Sehi, Average Joe Money on Twitter, just so you know which voice is which. And across this card table from me, it's my partner in crime, the one and only other guy, or as we call him, OG. Hey, man.
I have been talking about Girl Scout cookies already, but hey.
You know what we should be talking about is sending people to stackybenjamins.com/magnify money. Because when you go to magnify money, it's longer lasting than a Girl Scout. You know how you eat the Girl Scout cookie and it's just absolutely, it's over.
I can eat an entire sleet. Do you put your Thin Mints in the freezer?
We do.
Yeah. And you can just, now they've gotten sneaky. They've made those sleeves a little thinner.
Smaller.
As the years have gone on, yeah, to keep the price the same.
Right.
It's like ice cream. But, you know, the tubs get smaller and smaller, but it's still $4. But man, I can put down a sleeve of Girl Scout cookies. Like you get in the freezer and you grab out a sleeve of them.
I wonder if Doug's going to have a merit badge for that.
Like, I will be happy to be in a Girl Scout cookie eating contest with somebody to get a merit badge.
Well, how about the merit badge for heading to Magnify Money? Because when you go to Magnify Money, just trying to get back on the rails, man, what you'll find is that the effects of that last a lot longer than that little pouch that you're building there.
What are you talking about? That pouch has been growing.
In your core.
I've been working on that for 20 years.
Whether it's your checking account, your savings account, your debt strategy. And first of all, you need a debt strategy. You're like, debt strategy? What's a debt strategy? Companies have a strategy on how they strategically use debt. Think about your debt strategically. How are you making sure that you've got a plan to pay down your debt, pay it off? And Magnify Money can help you do that. StackyBenjamins.com/magnify money. Another place that'll help you do that are our friends over at SoFi, because they look directly at a couple areas which are problems for a lot of people. Your student loans. That's a spot where you definitely want to look at how do we attack the student loans so that we get rid of those and move on with our life. StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI to get that done. And if you're trying to clean up that credit card debt, you know what you do? You head to StackyBenjamins.com/SOFI for a personal consolidation loan. We can wipe that baby out. And soon in our Facebook group, The Green Room, we're going to have Dan Macklin down to talk about refinancing student loans and exactly how we attack that. Because I think it's a big part of a strategy of somebody, especially in their 20s, is do I string those student loans out for a longer period of time? Do I pay them off quickly? And a lot of that depends on your goals, the interest rate, those types of things. So $100 if you use our link, stackybenjamins.com/SOFI. Man, great show today. As Doug explained, we've got Tracy Phobes coming down to the basement. We're going to talk about saving money at the grocery store, OG, because the average family pays up.
Man, we spend so much money at the grocery
store. Bunch of money for groceries.
Dang, and, it's a, it, that, that is a huge line item in the budget.
Well, she's gonna make it much, much smaller. So Tracy upstairs talking to mom right now. But first, let's get to some headlines because we've got some big ones.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's Headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from Reuters. World's 8 richest men are worth as much as 3.6 billion people. Even as the world's economies have expanded, this piece says by Amy Peachy, their riches are increasingly concentrated in the hands of a few, so much so that the richest 8 billionaires today hold as much wealth as the poorest half of humanity. So let's take a look at this list because this is pretty interesting, OG, because whenever we talk about fees on the show, right? We talk about, I mean, people always want to bring up fees and they want to bring up not hiring a financial advisor and doing it yourself, right? That somehow those are the keys to getting ahead in life. So number one on this list.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, Bill Gates, $75 billion. Think his plan to get to $75 billion was not having any advisors around him and focusing on low-cost index funds?
Well, no, it wasn't.
Okay, number two. Spanish retail magnate, Amancio Ortega, $67 billion, founder of Zara, among other retail companies. Number three, Warren Buffett, 60.8. Number four, Carlos Slim Halo, $50 billion. Jeff Bezos, then Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Ellison, and Michael Bloomberg. In that whole list, including Buffett, low-cost fees, not having an advisor, none of them.
Not a single one.
Which is interesting because I know that everybody's goal isn't to become completely wealthy. And certainly, as we've talked about, there is a place for fees and they should be low, right?
Yeah, it's icing on the cake. Right?
Absolutely. Should have that. Makes a ton of sense to have that. And then also, it does make sense to have your financial house in order and to know what's going on. But all these people have great people around them. Even you know, Warren Buffett has Charlie Munger.
Well, and they do other things too. You see these headlines from time to time. They do the other things that people think are kind of no-brainers, right? Like Warren Buffett lives in the same house that he bought in the 60s, paid off, drives a beat-up pickup truck. You know, he didn't get this way by having a whole bunch of consumer debt. He didn't get this way by keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
You know, another common theme with all of these, and we talk about this from time to time as well, is do what you're really good at. And get rid of all the other things as best as you can. And obviously, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, people like that, can do away with all sorts of things that you and I can't do away with, you know, in our daily lives. But they started by concentrating on their really, really, really good thing that they could do. Their, you know, what we call unique ability. So that is a common theme throughout successful people, not just the wealthiest people in the world,
sure,
but also a lot of successful people too.
Yeah, you don't have to be somebody that wants to, you know, a lot of these people started their own business, right? And you don't have to be somebody that started your own business. But still, I think it's important for everybody to know how the business runs, to know what the important drivers are for the business. So if you want a raise and you know what's important to your boss, you're much more likely to get the raise knowing what's important to the company than you are if you just storm in and say, you know what, I work at McDonald's, I deserve $15 an hour.
Yeah. Well, that was a touchy subject. You went there, huh?
Well, the example is a good one because I feel for those people. We all want $15 an hour, but if they understand the economics of that particular business, where's the $15 going to come from?
Well, and you continue to, and it sounds maybe a little hoity-toity, man, not hoity-toity, a little foo-foo maybe, right? Continue to provide value for other people and you'll get the rewards of that, right? Whether that's monetary or otherwise. You know, if you're in a position at your company and you continue to provide value for the stakeholders of your company, that might be the CEO, it might be for your manager, it might be for your customers or consumers, eventually that'll be rewarded. And then you continue to hone in on that one particular thing that we talk about that you're really good at. It may not be your own business. It may be working in someone else's business, but you're the really good person at X.
Yeah.
And that makes you highly, highly valuable.
And I think to some degree, you have to be, if you're going to work in somebody else's business, you know, there's chiefs and there's people working for the chiefs, but you have to be able to look over their shoulder and see where the chief is driving the boat, right?
I can't remember who, again, we talked about this last week. I was reading a little snippet from Tim Ferriss's new book. And I don't remember who said it, but one of the chapters had an article about a guy who, when he was at Google, would just show up in the executive meeting and just sit in the corner with a notepad and take notes. And finally somebody said, "What are you doing here?" And he just said, "Oh, I'm taking notes for you guys." And they'd go, "Oh, okay." And so he was involved in this high level discussion without being involved in the high level discussion, you know? And so he got to experience, hey, what are these guys talking about? What are they thinking about? What, you know, what direction are they headed?
It's amazing he got to stay in that room.
But he provided value. I seriously doubt that he didn't type up the notes then and send them out to everybody.
Right.
Hey, here's the notes from today's meeting. Hey, that guy's really important. He needs to sit in that corner. I don't have to take notes. He takes really good notes for us. So
our second headline comes to us from Fox Business. This written by Lawrence
of Arabia.
Man, it might as well be Delavane. Sometimes, sorry, Lawrence, I think I messed that up. Struggling hedge funds still do a couple things. I'm not going to read this headline. They still do a couple things, even if they're struggling. What do you think that struggling hedge funds do that successful hedge funds do also?
Oh, this is the pro list, like the pros and cons. This is the things they do well. Is this what you're talking about? Well, or just the things they do?
There's two things that they do, even though they're struggling, that they probably shouldn't do, that successful hedge funds also do. How about these two, OG? I'll just give it to you.
Yeah, please.
They still expense bonuses and the bar tabs.
Okay.
Investors are starting to sour on the idea of reimbursing hedge funds for multi-million dollar trader bonuses, lavish marketing dinners, and trophy office space. Powerful firms such as Citadel LLC and Millennium Management LLC charge clients for such costs through so-called, quote, pass-through fees, which could include everything from a new hire's deferred compensation to travel, tie-in technology. It all adds up. Investors often end up paying more than double the industry standard fees of 2% of assets and 20% of investment gains, which many already consider too high. I bring this to the table because
it's a great idea. How come I didn't think of this? I can expense my dinners to my client fees before I charge them fees. I love it.
Talking about fees, you know, people also go, "Oh, there's all these investments I can't get. I wish I could get in a hedge fund. It'd be so great if awesome. I could get in a hedge fund." And then you look at
I give up 2% of my asset value and 20% of the profits. Plus,
even if the firm doesn't
charter,
even if the firm doesn't have profits, they still pass it through to the investor when they go out for beers afterwards.
Interesting how they do that. They must commingle the funds and then just subtract it out before they. I mean, almost like a law firm does, I guess. Basically, is what they're doing, right? Where a law firm, no offense to law firms, but you know, a law firm will charge you for copies and that sort of hard costs. That must be what they do there. They just say, well, before we draft the fees out of the account, we gotta take out cost of goods sold, basically, right? And the cost of goods sold is my $2 million bonus.
Before the 2% gets taken out.
And now I can charge you the 2% after I expense off my Super Bowl tickets and private jet ride down to Houston.
You know,
we're in the wrong business, brother.
I'll tell you, hedge funds are really a scary place to be. I just can't imagine. The more over the years that I've read about hedge funds and that I've seen hedge funds in action, the less I want a piece of that action, you know?
My favorite book about this is from David Einhorn, who runs a company called Greenlight Capital in Connecticut. And he's a hedge fund manager. So, you know, it is what it is. But he wrote a book called Fooling Some of the People All of the Time. It is a fantastic read about how this is pre, you know, housing crisis, how companies just make stuff up to make their numbers look good, and how he caught a number of companies doing it and then finally brought him, you know, quote unquote, brought him to justice by shorting the heck out of the stock. And then he made his billions doing that. But yeah, the lengths at which another, you know, it's a little bit of a sensationalized story, but that Showtime show Billions,
right,
kind of does right, a similar kind of unmasks a little bit of the intrigue that's there. Of course, they only show all the cool parts, like fast cars and cool houses, you know,
sure,
and FBI raids.
Yeah. The cool parts. Right. Yeah. Just what I want when I go home on a Friday night is an FBI raid.
And usually they come on Tuesdays, from what I understand.
That'll heighten my weekend.
A friend of mine told me that.
A friend of yours. Michael Hennessy, co-founder of hedge fund investment firm Morgan Creek Capital Management, says this, I think, pretty well in the article. He says high fees and expenses are hard to stomach, particularly in a low return environment, but it's all about the net. And that is exactly.
There you go. Well, it's about the net.
That's exactly what hedge funds are
promising. But net of everything, we're still sucking.
Yeah, right. Look at how much money you could lose net of fees. Yeah. You want to see my dogs again or my ponies? And there are, contrary to a lot of popular belief, there are people that fairly consistently, OG, have a history in hedge funds of making good money for their clients, even after fees. However, they're not the
Until the music stops.
Well, they're not the kind of person that you and I can hire.
Well, yeah. So first of all, there's, you know, to kind of have access to some of those smartest people in the room, so to speak, number one, you're giving up control of all your money. You know, you don't get to put your money in a hedge fund and trade out of it at the end of the night. Right. You know what I mean? Right. That money goes in and it's there until they say otherwise. And you also have to have a gazillion dollars to be able to get in the queue. You know, just they don't take $100,000 rollovers. Just don't work like that.
Lesson number one, I think, from today's headlines is that while tracking fees is important and good money management practice, certainly important for the wealthiest people in the world, there are bigger dragons, OG.
Surround yourself with good people.
It's a piece of the puzzle, but not the biggest piece of the puzzle. But the second lesson is when we talk about high fees, come on, there's high fees and then there's high fees. Why people want something that a lot of us can't get into the hedge fund business, kind of beyond me.
We should expense a trip to Tahoe to our podcast listeners, right. You know, to give them a little experience. Kind of
net of the fees they pay for this.
So, net of the fees, it'll be great. Right.
Upstairs talking to Mom, OG, somebody who has over 600,000 people, I think 625,000 people. Is that amazing? Follow her on Facebook. I believe she has over 1 million people that visit her website, nice. Penny Pinch and Mom website. This woman knows everything there is to know about taking a dollar and stretching it farther than you thought you ever could.
I'm going to send Mrs. OG to boot camp.
Mrs. OG is going to send you to boot camp. Because I know it's not Mrs. OG putting the ice cream in the cart when you go to the grocery store. It's probably you.
Bluebell's so good, though.
Bluebell is just amazing. So coming down to the basement to teach us a grocery shopping 101, Tracy Phobes. Tracy Phobes walking down the stairs, the Penny Pinching Mom. Have a seat. How are you doing?
I am awesome. How about you, Joe?
Well, I'm better now that you're here.
Good company in return there, buddy.
I'm very interested in making this trip to the grocery store, not the horror story that it is for a lot of people. But before we do that, I'm always interested in how like people became who they are. And this guru said one time, he said that people get where they're at because of perspiration or desperation. And if I have your story right, tell me if I'm wrong. Your story, you became who you are today, the Penny Pinching Mom, more because of desperation. Is that right?
You are right on the money as usual. So yeah, my husband and I, we got ourselves into debt like so many people. And we were pulling that whole rob Peter, pay Paul routine for just way too long. Finally, we had enough. We couldn't put up with that anymore. So we thought, let's just try to get rid of this debt. Let's try to rein this all in.
How bad was the debt?
It was $37,000, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I wasn't working. You know, we were a one-income family. So that was a lot of money going out to everybody but us on our budget every month. So it was tough.
And so do you remember where you were when you said it can't be like this anymore? Because it's funny the number of people, Tracy, that can tell me exactly like the time, the day where they're like, you know what? I'm done. I can't live like this.
And that's exactly it. I remember it was November 8th or 9th. I can't remember the exact day, but pretty darn close. And considering that was back in 2009, to remember the date, that says a lot. But it was making a budget and just, it wasn't working. Okay, it really wasn't a budget. Let's just call it what it was, a piece of paper with a bunch of numbers written on it. Okay. Right. And I just looked at my husband. I'm like, I can't do this anymore. And so he's like, go take a break. Why don't you go out to dinner with your friends tonight? I'm like, okay, fine. I know we're broke as broke can be. But he's like, just go, you know, it costs you 10, 15 bucks. You need it. And we sat down at the dinner table and it came time to pay. And the gal next to me pulled out this envelope And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, because we're all using like plastic to pay for everything like every other American does. And she started explaining how they got out of debt. I went home and my husband and I stayed up till like 1 a.m, like researching and talking and thinking, oh my gosh, they had the exact same situation we did. If they can do it, so can we.
That's awesome.
The rest is history.
That is so absolutely. How long did it take to get the 37,000 gone?
About 27 months.
Okay.
And had I not, you know, developed a business of my own, I know it would have taken us longer. You know, I attribute that to part of it, that I found a way to make more money for my family. So,
yeah, I like that because we say, you know, we're about to talk grocery shopping and about ways to maybe cut your costs there. But it's always two things, right? I mean, like you're saying, it's not just cutting expenses. You can only cut so much. It's also earning more money.
Exactly. And so you can't necessarily, you know, create more income at your 9-to-5 job. So sometimes you got to think outside of the box and see what happens.
Well, you seem to be having a lot of fun with it too.
I do. I do. If I didn't like what I was doing, I would have quit a long time ago, but I absolutely love it.
I know you a little bit. I know you're not lying. You would quit like immediately. Like, no, I'm done with this. See ya.
Act like, peace out, dude. I'm gone. Right.
What happened?
That's right.
All right. So let's talk grocery store because this is your area of expertise. You're fantastic. You've helped a bunch of people. I was saying in your introduction that there's well over 600,000 people follow a lot of your grocery tips on your Facebook page. I know the number of people that visit your site are huge. Is it more about preparing, Tracy, before you go to the store, or is it more about what you do in the store?
Honestly, with the grocery store, you do have to put in some prep work. You can't just decide, hey, I need groceries, let's go. You're never going to save money if you do it that way. So there's a couple of things I always tell people to do. And this sounds, I know, like a broken record, but let me tell you, people, this stuff works, okay? Listen to me. I know what I'm talking about. But if you were to sit down and make a menu plan, that means figure out what you're going to eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner and snacks for 7 days. Go through every one of those meals that you want to prepare. Check your house, your pantry, your freezer, your refrigerator. Make a list of everything you need to buy. So you've got your menu plan so you know what you're going to eat. Then you figure out a shopping list.
I'm assuming then, Tracy, the reason for that to be number one is a way to save money is you get rid of waste.
Right, exactly. You're using the food you have on hand. Because the way I shop is when I prepare the meals or decide what I'm cooking for my family, I use my food on hand first. What's in the freezer, the pantry, the refrigerator. That's how I plan my meals. When I go to the grocery store, I'm trying to find all those great things that are on sale that I can just put in my pantry and use next time. So I'm kind of shopping in advance for future weeks, if that makes sense. So you plan based on what you have and you shop a little bit for the future. When you put those two things together, it really can work.
So planning based on what you have, that's where your idea for peanut butter hot dogs came from.
That's right. Exactly. I thought that was our trade secret there. You're not supposed to pass that along to anybody. Everyone's going to be begging us for the recipe now.
The kids are like, Mom, this is gross. You're like, no, it isn't. It's Nouveau Cuisine. Nouveau Cuisine.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. You know, I couldn't get to the grocery store this week, so we're living off of last week's menu plan again. And guess what? It's hot dogs, baby. It's hot dogs.
with peanut butter on them, right?
That's right.
Yes.
We had to get a little extra protein in there, so.
Exactly. All right. So now I'm looking at what I have. I'm creating my menu of what I'm going to eat that week. Mm-hmm. And then I'm looking, is this where the coupons come in or are you not about coupons?
You know, I used to be so big into coupons, but to be completely honest with you, coupons are not what they used to be. There was so much fraud and people got into them so heavy and were doing so much with them.
What does fraud mean?
Stores changed their policies.
Yeah,
so.
I'm sorry. What's the fraud, Tracy? Was it all the extreme couponing going on?
That was a lot of it. People trying to use coupons for products for which they were not entitled was some of it. A lot of fake coupons that were being produced and generated. And, you know, I mean, people were trying to print off coupons to save $9 on a box of Pampers. I mean, come on. You know, you can't save $9 on a box of Pampers with a coupon, people. But people were using these coupons and those were fake. And so stores had to cut their losses because those fake coupons, if they take them, guess what? The store does not get reimbursed. They are out that money. So it's basically like theft. So they had to really get strict with those policies and change things. And so it's really kind of put a damper, if you will, on the whole couponing community. Doesn't mean they don't still work. I mean, they absolutely do. but you really have to look beyond the coupon if you're really wanting to save money.
So what do you do then? I mean, we talk to people on our FreshBooks FinTech Friday segments about, you know, apps and things like that. Have those largely replaced them? Are there apps that you like instead, like some of the grocery store apps?
Yeah, absolutely. Your groceries, a lot of grocery stores anymore, they might put digital coupons on an app, so they have more control over the coupons that you use. So you would scan your phone at checkout. There are rebate sites such as Ibotta and Checkout 51, to name a couple of them. And the way those work is you go in and you kind of look at the offers they have and you claim the offers you want. You go to the store, you buy those products, then you scan a copy of your receipt, then you get the money back. So it's saving money, but kind of on the back end of your shopping by getting money back from those manufacturers.
I would assume that those sprung up based on what you talked about. It's hard to have fraud when you already bought the item.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So by having that receipt and the receipt verifies you did purchase that product, it just puts a little bit more checks and balances and some controls in place to really reduce the amount of fraud that happens.
This is a little bit off topic, but how much of this batch cooking do you do where you batch make a bunch of food, stick a bunch of it in a deep freeze and have it over the next month?
Zero.
Okay.
I want to get into that, but I'm just lucky that, you know, we have hot dogs and peanut butter on the table at dinner. So let's just be honest.
Together.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. All right. So now I'm headed to the grocery store, I think, yeah. Or is there anything else I need to do?
Well, you do need to make your shopping list.
Gotcha.
Okay. Look at that menu plan and write down everything you want. Look at the sales flyer for the week to see what's on sale. And that way then, you know, you can stock up on those items. And your trick is to look at the first page of the ad. Those are what we call loss leaders. Basically, it means that stores sell those items at cost or below just to get you into the door. Because they know if you tell them you've got grapes for 99 cents a pound, people are going to come in to buy grapes, but they're not just going to leave. They're going to come get the grapes and then stay and buy other stuff. So it kind of can offset those losses. But that's where you'll find your greatest savings is on that cover page.
Awesome. And the rest of it then are not as big a deal?
Usually they're not. They're okay. Just a few little, you know, discounts here and there, but they're not the big things that you would want to stock up on and the items that you should really focus on when you go to the store.
I would imagine if I'm using your process then, Tracy, when I look at that front page, I'm doing a few substitutes. I'm like, hey, I was going to have this, but this is something close. It's on sale. So we're going to swap that baby out.
Ding, ding, ding. You got it. Yep. That's exactly it. So if you were planning on having to, say, buy ground beef this week for a couple of meals, but you know, you've got chicken breasts on sale this week. Okay, guess what? One of those meals, you're getting swapped out and we're going to do something with chicken instead because it's affordable. And when you see that discount on chicken, for example, that's where you buy a few extras and throw them in your freezer.
Ah, so then next week, once again, going to stuff that's on hand, I start off with we're having chicken next week too.
Yeah, chicken on, you know, even though chicken's back full price at the grocery store this week, guess what? We're eating chicken that was $1.19 a pound or whatever the price happened to be.
Yeah, at that price, you'll have chicken the next 6 months.
That's exactly it. So you always stock up on those sales and get as much as you can, and then you're consuming products at a discount. So it's a great way to work it.
So now I'm on my way to the store, and the one thing that I know, because I know very little, but what I do know is that everybody says, hey, for health reasons, shop the outside of the store and avoid the middle.
And that's exactly right. You know, if you rock your perimeter. And the thing is, grocery stores know this, and they're all set up the same way. It's just, you know, you're going to hit your bread, your dairy, and your meat, and your produce just in different sections around the store. So that really can, doesn't necessarily save you money, but it keeps you on that path to eating less processed foods. And it's the processed foods, to be honest, that really can rack up a big grocery bill once you get to the checkout. They're tempting, they're easy to see, you know, they're convenient. That's what we're paying for. We're in a world of convenience. I don't have time to cook dinner. But if you were to take the time and actually build some of those other meals, you wouldn't have to buy the processed items and you would have more money to purchase produce or those fresh items that you should use.
Are there other keys when I'm at the grocery store that I have to remember besides stay away from the ice cream aisle?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, here's another one a lot of people don't know about is those end caps, like the ends of the aisles, they always put items there. Those items aren't always on sale.
Oh.
They are there because they think, okay, if you put this here and you have a price on it, people see that and their attention gets drawn to it. check the original price. Take the time. If you see juice and it shows it's $2.19 for this jug of juice, and you're like, well, that seems like a good price, you know, because it says low price on it. Go to the juice aisle. Look and see. You know, it might really be $2.29. Whoop-de-doo, it's 10 cents off. That is not a deal. It's not something you should rush and stock up on. So be careful of those end caps because they can trick you.
Anything else I need to remember while I'm there?
One final thing, try those store brands. Little known secret is that most store brands are the big guys in sheep's clothing. For instance, we have a small local store here, a mom and pop store, and they sell their own brand name bread. That brand name bread is Wonder Bread at a fraction of the cost. So give those store brands a try. You're not sacrificing quality. If anything, you're just not paying for a fancy label to be slapped on your package.
Wonder Bread's the bread that mom would never let us eat.
Yeah, me neither. I never got Wonder Bread. And I always felt so neglected, you know? Like my mom made me buy store bread and I never understood it until I became a mom. And I'm like, well, duh, my mom was smart about it too.
I know.
Go figure. Mom knew what she was talking about.
Now I should be thanking mom that I don't weigh 9,750 pounds, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's so awesome. But your point's well taken. I mean, we've known that forever with cereal, right? I mean, that right. A lot of times they're putting checks in the store brand checks thing. So same stuff. That is awesome. It's funny. A little while ago, I was introduced to like the fact that if I buy stuff at Target, there's like I automatically get 5% off if I use the red card. And for years, Tracy, I told these people, I don't need your card. And
then I did too. I actually had to write a blog post. My first was like, I will never have a red card. Then I had to consume some crow and tell my readers, okay, yeah, I was wrong. Yes, the red
so
card
wrong.
Is a beautiful thing. Yes,
absolutely.
I was very wrong. So yeah, your red card's awesome.
Well, I'm so used to people telling me that they want me to buy the store credit card that I never heard, like I might've heard it, but I didn't hear it, that this isn't a credit card. It hooks right up to my debit. I mean, it's the same thing. Are other places, I guess my question was, other places doing that besides Target? I mean, do we see other stores following that same methodology?
I have not. I have not seen any other car stores that are offering the debit card with it. It's still their store credit card. Okay. So you still have to be careful about those traps. But what I always do, like a big place I shop, I've got three kids. We all know that kids, like, they grow. Seriously, I bought my daughter pants in the middle of December. She came down the stairs this morning and I could have smacked her because they're like a half an inch too short. So here I had to buy pants again.
Wait,
so
but you wanted to smack your kid because she's a grower.
I know it. Well, it's just costing me money. No, I didn't really want to smack her, but you know.
I know.
But I was like, you know, I always joke. I'm like, you guys have to stop growing because you just make me spend more and more money. So I have to buy clothes continuously because they never wear out. They just outgrow them. So I use Kohl's a lot. But what I do at Kohl's is I have their charge card because I can get like the 30% off discount all of the time. So I'm using a sale price plus 30% off. And so I buy it online, I pick it up in the store, paid for it with my Kohl's charge. The second it's in my hand, I turn around and say, guess what? I'm paying this sucker off right there at the checkout. I have saved 30% instantly simply by swiping that card, but that I'm not allowing interest to accrue or anything. I'm paying it off immediately and there's never an issue.
Yeah. Now there's even Debitize, that app that will do it automatically for you. So it makes it even easier. That's cool.
It is. You know, it's like anything we can do to make our life simpler. And there's so many different tricks to definitely saving money.
Yeah. Is that on everything at Kohl's? It's always 30% off if you use their card?
It is. It's not always. They always send out coupons, but a lot of times those coupons, when they come in the mail, not everybody gets a 30% off. But you know me, I've always got tricks up my sleeve. Number one, there's an app for your phone called Coupon Sherpa. You know, like the little guys in the Himalayas?
Sure.
The Sherpas. Yeah. Favorite app ever. All of these retail coupons that get released, they put them on an app. So when you're at any retail store, you can pull that app up and like, oh, Hobby Lobby, look, 40% off coupon right on my phone. Oh, look, Kohl's, there's a 30% off I didn't have before. So you can use that app in the store. I also go to RetailMeNot to find coupon codes for online shopping. So I always make sure that I'm either checking my phone in the store or I check online before I ever make a purchase because there's always coupon codes or discounts everywhere. You just have to know where to look.
And you know, it's cool, Tracy. This is just the tip of the iceberg. And now that I have you started, I bet you could do this for 4 hours, but we're out of time.
Oh my gosh. Hey, you know what? I guess people are just out of luck. They can't save any more money. Sorry. Yeah.
I wish there was a place, there was a resource out there where I could send people where they could get more of this goodness.
You know, let me think really hard. Oh, I have the perfect place I need to go.
Where would that be?
That would be www.pennypensionmom.com.
Do you send out a newsletter?
I do. We actually have a couple of different things that we send out. We have a daily digest. We do some coupons and deals on our site. So we're always looking for little discounts. And every afternoon, we'll send an email out saying, hey, here's the deals we found today. So you can get that one. Or you can just get our basic email and we send a little information out about money saving tips and ideas from time to time. So
I even like
you
that.
Can sign up.
I even like that on your Facebook page too. Penny Pinchin Mom Facebook page.
Yep.
Also
sign good, us there as well.
Yeah, good stuff there. Too bad you've got nothing going on.
I know. I'm just like sitting here just twiddling my thumbs, just was, you know, waiting for that magic phone call from Joe that I got to come over and hang out with him and talk to him for a little bit, you know, just like made my whole day.
Well, the good news is now that you finished this part, I got to get back to OG, but you get to go have cake with Mom. So that's good.
That's awesome. I'm ready. Bring it on.
Thanks for hanging out.
All right. Thanks, Joe.
Hey everyone, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and things are rolling here on our new money club. Joe's mom's agreed to knit us some hats. Joe and OG ignore the idea, which makes us all know that it's clearly the best idea we've had down here in some time. And that Tracy Phobes, as soon as I get done here, I'm handing that woman a badge and checking to see if she wants to head up the wine and cheese fundraising drive committee. She'll easily find that stuff on sale. Everybody's talking about scoring some cheddar. How about some cheddar and Cabernet? Even better. For now, let's handle your trivia, though. Here it is. Tracy just gave us some great tips to save money at the grocery store. According to the USDA, how much should a family of four spend on a moderately priced basket of groceries each week? I'll have the answer and a badge for you if you get it right in just a moment.
Time for a quick timeout to pay the bills. And speaking of paying bills, the centerpiece of your entire bill paying and home operating budget is your checking account, isn't it? So why not have a good one? StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney can help you quickly compare checking, savings, and credit card options. Magnify Money. How'd they come up with that name? CEO Nick Clemens shares the story.
Well, I spent years working in banking, and every time we wanted to find a way to make a little bit more money, we would get some lawyers in the room, we would add some extra fine print, and that fine print would help us charge more money. And so what we wanted to do at Magnify Money is we wanted to be the magnifying glass to help go through the fine print, find the traps, and make it really easy for people to avoid them and to spend less money on banking.
Head to StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. The magnifying glass that saves people on average $450. We're also happy to be sponsored by SoFi. Find them at StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. We've told you before, we tell you all the time about their low rates and flexible terms for student loans, personal loans, and mortgages. But we asked co-founder Dan Macklin how easy it is to apply. How easy is it, Dan?
It's really easy. You go to SoFi.com and apply. It takes about 10 minutes. We ask for a few pieces of information. And then we will approve you or not approve you instantly in the vast majority of cases. So within 10 minutes, you'll know if you have a rate, what that rate is, and we'll show you calculations as to how much money you can save. So that's extremely quick and simple.
That takes a lot of hamsters to spin that wheel, Dan.
Yeah, we do a soft credit pull. We're running your credit in the background. But assuming that everything matches up, then it really is a 10-minute process for you. And then it's an instantaneous approval decision for the majority of folks.
Let's find out right now how much lower your interest rates can be. Head to StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I.
Hey, it's Joe's mom's neighbor, Duggan. We've hit a little bit of a snag. The ladies have informed me that the adult living apartments bus can bring them to the basement for meetings, but they're going to have trouble navigating the stairs. Looks like somebody's going to have to clean up all the ice cream biz stuff in the garage. But no worry, we'll cross that bridge later. For now, your trivia. Here was the question. According to the USDA, how much should a family of four spend on a moderately priced basket of groceries each week at the store? The answer? While the USDA has several different recommended plans, a family working with a moderate budget, the USDA expects to spend $241.60 a week. Looking to go cheap? The USDA says you'll spend $146.90 on a balanced budget. How does that compare to yours? If you can match USDA numbers, I might recommend you to the club council for a board position. Who knows? You could organize next year's banana stand building project. Apparently, that's where television shows say you should keep your money, right? See ya!
You watch that show?
There's always money in the banana stand.
There's money in the banana stand. If you don't get that.
I was just having a Facebook conversation with an old high school friend about that.
About watching the show is Arrested Development.
That, oh, you gave it away.
Well, that Doug's referring to. I just got to bring people in on the joke.
No, that's part of the joke, is that only some people know the joke.
Is it? Sorry, man. Well, only still only all three Stacky Benjamin's listeners, OG, now know the joke. The three of them, the two of us, think we're still good.
Tobias's fantastic new job, analrapist.
I forgot that one.
He's an analyst and a therapist. He's an analyst.
Yeah.
Write that one out, folks. Yeah, figure it out.
$241.60 on groceries.
That is a lot of money. I think that that's probably about what we pay, maybe a little less than that. I think Mrs. OG does a good job of staying under 200 a week, but
that's a lot of money.
That was way more than I thought the USDA would say. I thought they were going to come in with like $47 or something.
Yeah, and they even have more luxurious plans, probably that include a lot more fish, right? That are up in the 300 something range. That can be pretty expensive.
That's a big number.
Yeah, and that's why
we're going to start skipping dinners.
Well, that's why I love what Tracy says. But the planning ahead of time is the key, right? Because you throw stuff out, and if you plan ahead of time based on what you already have, you'll waste less, and that's the key to the big savings. Even though, isn't it amazing, too, how she takes all these apps, and she's just throwing out, oh, do this thing, do this thing, do this thing. Like, man, if I had that ability, amazing. Good stuff from Tracy. We'll have a link, by the way, to the Penny Pinchin Mom at our show notes at StackyBenjamins.com. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline to a listener and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency are disrupting the life insurance industry by focusing on what you value most, your family and your time. They were the first life insurance startup OG that's also backed by industry giant Mass Mutual to create a high quality, affordable term life insurance policy you can purchase entirely online. And guess what? Qualified, healthy applicants, they can even skip that medical exam. Head to StackyBenjamins.com/Haven Life now to learn about life insurance the modern way.
Super simple, by the way. I went through the process in under 10 minutes.
They are still the only insurance company that gives you an immediate decision on coverage. Immediately says, yes, no. Most life insurance companies, as you know,
takes
weeks.
A couple weeks, yeah.
Yeah, to find out whether or not you're covered. StackyBenjamins.com/Haven Life. Hey, guess what? As I mentioned before, the barrel is fairly empty, but I do have a sound clip after I read this letter. So we're going to call this the Haven Lifeline. Very, very important piece of the Haven Lifeline. This letter comes to us from Dave at thenewyorkbudget.com. He says, dude, I just watched the most recent episode of The Simpsons. There was a moment after Mr. Burns went broke, racking up millions of dollars in credit card debt. And he actually sent me the clip. And he said, knowing about my story, is there somebody at The Simpsons? Is there somebody who writes for The Simpsons that actually listens to the show? Because listen to, we'll play this little clip from The Simpsons.
Spent and gone. I splashed all my cash.
Don't be so hard on yourself. It was your first credit card.
And I handled it as well as a freshman at Michigan State.
Now, Dave says, Dave knows a little bit about my story. I was at the Citadel when I wrecked my first credit card. There was a student union called Mark Clark Hall. I walked in there and there was an American Express table. And so I applied for a American Express card, had no way to pay it off, took all my friends to dinner, nice expensive dinner. And then I also bought myself this cool sweater at Nordstrom, of course, because you got to go. Yeah, because I'm in a military college. What am I going to do there? So I transferred to Michigan State. And by then my credit was already just in shambles. But it's amazing. I've talked about that on several shows. So I'm wondering, Dave's wondering if we've got somebody who listens to the show that writes for The Simpsons.
That would be pretty cool.
If so, that would be really cool. Thanks for that, Dave. Obviously, because we don't have anything in the hopper for the Lifeline. You are first, if you get that to me fairly quickly, stackofbenjamins.com/voicemail to be first in line at the Haven Lifeline. We also get letters, and we're not running that far behind on letters anymore either, maybe a few weeks. This letter comes to us from Luke. Luke says, "Hey, Joe and OG, got a couple of questions that have come to mind during recent episodes. So let's see if we can tackle these since we didn't spend much time on the Haven Lifeline today." He says, "In the August 17th episode, you talked about having a continuity plan in a secure place in the event of our eventual demise. How much information is necessary for my spouse or heirs to gain access to my assets? Should I make a list of websites, user IDs, and passwords, which would need to be updated regularly, or just the name of the companies that hold my assets?" Great question there, Luke. What do you think, OG?
I think trying to keep track of all the user IDs and passwords is going to be pretty impossible on an ongoing basis. Using a tool like you use LastPass or Dashlane or whatever can help with that, because you could, you know, have like the super secret password under lock and key, but even that changes tolerably frequently. So the biggest piece is just going to be to make sure that people are aware of where the money is. You know, Citibank's not going to care that you don't have the user ID and password. Frankly, they'll probably lock the account anyway once they find out that the account owner has passed away. They're more interested, or you'd be more interested in actually knowing that there is an account at Citibank, not that there's a user ID and password there.
When I was a financial planner, it was about every 3 years that we would update the list of assets, right? And have just a line item. And I think between having that line item list, maybe update every 3 years, and then something like you said, like Dashlane, where, you know, if something happened to me, Cheryl knows how to get into Dashlane. She uses it too. We both know the master password. Then she goes line by line through each of those and says, okay, is there something here that we, is there a trail here that we need to know about?
I think this also makes a case for having a, you know, consolidated account statements or a consolidated person, somebody that's, you know, that can kind of guide you along the way there, whether that's like a mint or a personal capital type of website where, you know, there's all the information is in one place, all the credit cards, all the loan balances. At least that gives you the direction. You know, if you've got a financial advisor, that helps, because they're going to hopefully, if they, you know, do some financial planning, have a pretty good idea of where all the assets are. They might not know the accounts and that sort of thing, but they'll say, hey, you know, we've got a 401k plan somewhere that I know because it's in the plan, or we've got a life insurance policy over here because we did that.
At the very least, I'm thinking about writing out, you know, I mean, this is a kind of a bad analogy, but where the bodies are buried, just say, hey, when I die, check out my work, right? Talk to my HR people at work, because they're going to have this talk to the financial advisor. Here's the Dashlane password, you know, use those things to figure it out. Luke's second question is, he and his wife would like to retire at about 15 years, which is when the first of their three kids could be starting college. Not good plan, Luke.
Sorry, dude. Nice try.
Our livelihood would be supported by a pension, about $36,000, and by retirement account withdrawals. If the vast majority of our assets are located inside retirement accounts, and since our W-2 income would be zero, would this reduce or possibly eliminate the expected family contribution for FAFSA requirements and potentially be a coup for our kids receiving need-based aid or grants for college? Anxious to hear you guys pick apart this thought. Close, man, but no cigar there, unfortunately.
I don't know too much about the calculation on that because my kids are still some time away. Obviously, you do.
I do.
But my guess is that it hasn't changed that much in the last 15 years or 20 years. All income is going to count, and all your assets are going to count, at least in some capacity.
If you can figure out a way to leave that money there and only live on the pension and nothing else, so to totally have your life suck so that none of that money appears, that will be good for the FAFSA. But otherwise, you know, a few great resources there. Our friend Brad Baldridge has a show called Taming the Higher Cost of College. He's a great resource. Jody Okun's been on the show. Jody's a fantastic resource. So I would not take our word for it. I would definitely start doing. Here's what I like doing. I like doing those expected family contribution exercises ahead of time. They're actually fairly easy exercises to do so that you can start planning.
Yeah, you can do them online.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jody and Brad are two experts who will gladly point you the right way there. Thanks for the questions, Luke. If you've got a question for us, email those to me, joe@stackandbenjamins.com. But we are about 2 to 3 weeks behind on questions where the Haven Lifeline, stackandbenjamins.com/voicemail. You are next in line for that particular bin. And on that note, if you also want to be next in line with OG to talk to him about your financial planning in private, head to stackybenjamins.com/OG. That'll lead you to his calendar, and he can talk to you about what it'll take to work with him. Then maybe you get your merit badge for working with working with OG. You know, that whole program of Doug and the money. I like the idea of the money club. Having Doug run it, I think, is the fly in the ointment.
The demise of the money club is when it started, when he founded it.
Very well.
Yeah.
It's not like
Fight Club.
Yeah. Very well might not work. Hey, some people have been nice enough to give us a review, so we have to give them a shout out. We try to do that from time to time. 5 stars from KMBAFAY. KMBA Faye, love the fintech segments and information about finances. We'll continue to listen and not learn a thing, which is exactly how we like our listeners. If you learn something, keep that to yourself. We take no responsibility for anything that you may or may not learn on this show. So thanks a lot to KMBA Faye for leaving the review that's going on Mom's Fridge. Hey, coming up on Friday, fantastic roundtable. We've got 3 people in different spots who are talking, OG, about the process of insurance and buying life insurance, because that's something that is tough to make entertaining, but I think that these 3 will find a way. We have our friend Chris Huntley, who is in the term life insurance business. We have Sandy Smith from Yes, I Am Cheap. Sandy works in HR in her full-time job, so she sees it through the workplace. And then we have our friend Ty from the blog Get Rich Quickish, and he's got a family of 4. So he's a regular dude out there writing about money, buying insurance. So 3 different perspectives talking about myths around insurance, about excuses people use not to buy insurance, and talking about the steps to make it easy to make sure you've got the right amount, right type, right reason, and you don't buy too much. Because we've seen that too. Not as often, but we have
not very often, but we do see that occasionally. Yeah.
Yeah. People spending too much money in that area. So that's coming up on Friday. We'll see y'all back here on Friday. Go Stacks and Benjamins. Doug, take it from here. What should we have learned today?
What are today's lessons? Well, first, appreciate the investments opportunities that you have. Hedge funds, maybe somebody somewhere is getting rich off them, but for the most part, it kind of looks like that's a racket designed to help the managers keep the bar tab covered. Also, headed to the grocery store? With a little planning at home, you can control waste and help your pocketbook. But the big lesson? Don't plan a money club without buy-in first from Ethel and Gertrude. They've decided to start their own competing club, and they even offer hot tea and tennis lessons with Biff, the country club pool boy. Who can compete with that? This club's folding already. Damn it. Special thanks to Tracy Phobes for visiting us in the basement. You'll find links to her site, Penny Pinchin' Mom, on our show notes page at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration. There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. Special thanks also to Joe's mom for helping me explain to the merit badge making factory that we need to cancel our order. Who knew Joe's mom could speak such good Chinese? I just brought this podcast in for a landing, and I'm feeling #epic.
Welcome to the after show, where largely we are running through the backlog of movies that Joe's seen. And just there's this huge backlog. I've got so many movies I still want to talk about. Some good stuff. Thanks for everybody who's hit us up on Twitter and in the Facebook group talking about some of the stuff that they've seen that we've seen. I know that our friend Jeremy over at Go Curry Cracker, remember when he was on talking about his way, way, way early retirement, socked all that money away, sold most of his possessions. Now he's living the dream at under 40. Jeremy said he just got done watching Stranger Things and had hashtag weird on that, but absolutely loved it. Stranger Things was such a good series. Have you watched that yet?
No, we've talked about this 1,000 times.
About that you won't watch it.
Correct.
Yeah.
Isn't it like sci-fi?
Yes. Yes. Here's a movie that came out this year that now I notice is just recently available on Netflix. This is an Irish movie called Sing Street.
Your mother and I really are under a lot of pressure at the moment.
We had a look at our accounts and...
We're taking you out of school.
We're not taking you out of school. We're transferring you.
You'll be new then. What's your name?
Connor Lawler.
Shut up! We have a black shoe policy here, Mr. Lawler.
They're brown. They're quite sensible.
They're not black.
Who knows what this new prison will do for you? This is your time.
You see, it's beautiful.
How come you're not in school?
I'm a model.
Cool.
Do you want to be in a video for my band?
See, if you're in a band, sing me a song.
Take on me.
So he is 14 years old, just got transferred to a school for boys that's way less expensive than the school in Dublin that he was going to, and meets this girl who's a couple years older than him, OG. And like you just heard there, ask her why he's in school. She said she's a model. He realized he really wants to find a way to date her. So he says, hey, as a model, you should be in the videos for my band. The big problem, he doesn't have a band. So he's got to figure out how to form a band and then how to get the girl. And this movie is all about how he goes about trying to do those things. What it really is, it is a romp through the 1980s as his band is formed and goes through a bunch of hilarity as they try to get the band off the ground. But their band then is influenced by all of these bands over the 80s. So if you're somebody that likes music from the 80s, whether it's the really cheesy stuff or the alternative stuff or whatever, Sing Street, which, by the way, that's the name of the band that these young kids come up with. It's just a ride. And much like I said about Hidden Figures, where I didn't really care where it was going, I just really enjoyed it. Saw this movie on a plane and thought it was fantastic. Just another huge...
Where was the plane going? I can't believe that didn't come in the conversation.
Did I tell you that I recently went to Asia?
Oh, there it is. Okay.
Yeah, Southeast Asia. Yeah, so cool. I was on my way to Vietnam. What was funny was I had it on an iPad because we flew ANA, which was hilarious because there were like 7 choices for American movies, and then the rest of them were all Japanese movies, right? And some of them didn't even have subtitles. It was just, nope, English speaker, can't do it. So we loaded up an iPad with a few movies that we rented from iTunes, and Sing Street was one of those movies because I'd heard that it was pretty good from Film Spotting podcast. I watched it myself, handed the iPad to Cheryl. Now Cheryl has like the headphones in and she's about halfway through the movie and she turns to me and I can see the scene where the band has created another original song of their own. And she turns to me and says, "This song's not all that bad." She tells the entire rows in front of us, rows behind us, people trying to sleep. I'm like, "Hey, hey." She's like, "What?"
Indoor voice.
"It's a pretty good song." Yeah. But you know what? It's funny because if I knew you for 15 minutes, I would say, OG wouldn't like this movie. But I know you well enough to know you would love this movie. You will absolutely love it. This is your kind of movie, dude.
All right.
But not in the, you know, OG type of person that I want people to think I am.
What are you talking about?
But that soft.
Because that's who I am.
Absolutely.
Do I sound like that?
It's that soft OG inside that very few people know exists.
Yes. It's my Kenny G side.
Yes. Yeah. All right. That comes out after a glass and a half of wine, right? Okay. You fire up some Steel Magnolias and sit in front of the TV with that sleeve of Girl Scout cookies. And a box of tissue.
Some bonbons and Fault in Our Stars.
Just
glass of Pinot, and it goes downhill from there. And I'm sitting Indian style on my couch with a blanket on.
Mrs. OG comes over and slaps you, tells you to stop being such a But you can't help it. Cause guys gotta cry a little. No.
Yeah. Yep.
You seriously would love this movie. You, Mrs. OG, together, knowing both of you, this is a great movie for you guys to watch on Netflix. Awesome. Very fun. I can't remember if they say I think your kids actually might think it's kind of funny too. You know, might think it's kind of a fun movie. I don't know though about the F-bomb. I've thought about that. I think
they hear that enough from Mrs. OG. They know what it means.
When she tells them to stop being such boys.
In our house, it's a noun, verb, adverb, and adjective.
It works. It works every way. The good news is that I don't know if the kids will be able to understand it. There are some sentences these guys say because, man, the Irish accent gets kind of thick. So, like you heard on the little clip I played there, like, you know, half of it you probably couldn't even understand. But a lot of fun. Sing Street, big thumb up. Not sure where these movies are going to land now. You know, a big part of the year, I was bemoaning the fact that it just seemed like a bunch of Marvel movies and, you know, not a lot at the theater. And of course, like every stinking year here at the end of the year, like just great movie after great movie. Because as I mentioned, I still got some more that I think that you would really like. Right. And a couple.
I'm going to try to see some soon.
Are just absolutely horrible. So good stuff. Sing Street. So. All right, guys.
All right, buddy. That's it. I'll holler at you in a couple days, I suppose, eh?
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Okay.